Earlier this week, the U.S. Army announced that it will reinvestigate the friendly fire death of U.S. Ranger and former football star Pat Tillman. Tillman left the NFL and joined the Army after 9/11. He was shot to death on April 22nd by a fellow soldier on an isolated ridge in Afghanistan. Initially, the Army reported that he'd been killed in combat by enemy fire. Details remained murky until Washington Post managing editor Steve Call wrote a two-part series about what he found in his inquiry into Pat Tillman's death. The stories ran recently in the Post. If you have questions about the death of Pat Tillman, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email TOTN@NPR.org. Steve Call joins us now from his newspaper studio here in Washington. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to do it, Neil.
Why is the Army reinvestigating Pat Tillman's death now?
Well, they've received questions from a number of quarters, not just our work in the Post, but also from Senator John McCain and from the Tillman family. And they concluded in the face of those questions that they ought to go back and take a look at this. However, it's really not clear what the scope of this investigation is or what its sort of legal import is, because they have adjudicated a bunch of the cases previously.
He was killed last April, as was mentioned. The initial reports said that he had died heroically in combat. He was hurriedly issued a Silver Star.
He was killed on April 22nd. By April 26th, 4 days later, the Army's own records show they had taken 14 sworn witness statements from comrades in Tillman's platoon that made clear that he died in friendly fire. Nonetheless, 4 days after that, on April 30th, they issued a press release announcing the award of the Silver Star, but also providing a narrative of how it had been earned. And that narrative not only made no mention of friendly fire, but it distorted and exaggerated what had actually happened on the ridge where Tillman died.
You've pieced together what actually happened that day from those reports and from interviews?
Yes.
And what was the picture of what actually happened that day?
Tillman and his brother Kevin were part of a platoon of about 34 Rangers patrolling Taliban country in southeastern Afghanistan. The trouble began when one of their trucks broke down, and they were trying to figure out how to get it back for repair. The leader of the platoon was a West Point graduate, a young lieutenant, who recommended that he keep his platoon together, drop the truck off on a highway, then go to the mission objective, which was a village they were meant to clear of potential enemy forces. He was overruled from a distant tactical operations center by his superior officer, who ordered him to split the platoon in half. The lieutenant said, "I don't want to do that. It's getting dark. Doesn't make sense." Guy said, "Do it anyway." He pushed back until he felt he could push no more, accepted the mission, and at sunset hurriedly divided the platoon in half. The half containing Pat Tillman proceeded to a village where they were going to begin clearing operations. The half containing his brother moved toward the highway to try to drop off the truck. But as they moved down that road, they found they couldn't get through, so they turned around, and without being able to communicate by radio because of high canyon walls, they retraced the path that the first part had already been down. And as they entered a canyon, according to witness statements from members of this part of the platoon, they came under fire from Afghans ambushing them from atop of a canyon. They shot back. A lot of chaos ensued. One truck with very heavy machine guns fired very strongly and urgently at the people they believed were attacking them until they escaped from the canyon. And they came flying out of the
canyon. Steve, you may want to just adjust the wires there, if you can hear me. You're cutting in and out, and it sounds like there may be a poor connection.
I'm sorry. Is this better now?
Yeah, it's a little bit better now.
Anyway, this part of the platoon that was in the canyon ambush came flying out of the canyon, essentially smacked into the other half of the platoon that was coming to try to help them. And Pat Tillman was in this second half of the platoon. Just to finish the story really quickly, Pat Tillman and his comrades up on the ridge recognized that they were being shot at by their own comrades. And they started waving their arms, shouting, "Cease fire, we're friendlies." Pat Tillman himself even set off a smoke grenade to try to attract attention. And he believed that he had done so. The firing subsided for a moment, and he and another ranger near him stood up, and then a second burst from their platoon mates came at him, and that was when he was killed.
The citation said that he had died even as his voice rang out across the battlefield. According to your report, the thing he was yelling across the battlefield is, "We're friendly, don't shoot."
Exactly. Ceasefire, we're friendly, as I'm Pat Tillman, damn it, don't shoot me.
Let's get a caller on the line, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-TALK, also email TOTN@NPR.org, and we'll talk with Ali, who joins us from Baltimore.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just a quick comment and then a question. Mr. Cole, I'm reading your book, Ghost Wars, on the last 10 pages, which is the final chapter. It is by far the best book on Afghanistan and the entire subject of Middle East and terrorism that I have ever read. I'm holding off on reading the last 10 pages because I don't want to put it down. I don't want it to come to an end. So thank you for that great contribution to the debate over Afghanistan.
Thank you.
Intelligence. My question is basically, have you lost kind of confidence in the military? Has your credibility kind of been in doubt with you after what you knew before and what you know now?
Well, this Tillman episode is really difficult to explain how senior commanders could have made the series of decisions they did. Not so much the decisions that led to the fratricide, which, while regrettable and maybe even criminal, are not that different from the sorts of mistakes that occur on the battlefield. But in the aftermath, the decision to not tell the family for 5 weeks, to not tell his own brother while he accompanied his brother's body back to the United States, to not tell Senator John McCain when he appeared at a public memorial on May 3rd to celebrate Tillman's heroism. I mean, at what point in a senior sort of career in the Army do you not realize that lying to John McCain is basically a bad idea? And this persisted for 5 or 6 weeks. And I don't have enough. The documentation I obtained describes a lot of things, but it doesn't describe the state of mind of the people who made these decisions.
Ali,
I just don't know how to explain it.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk now with Mike, and Mike's calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hello, I'm a former Army Ranger, and I was in conflicts in Panama and Desert Storm, and this, you know, fratricide is not isolated. This happens, I would say, frequently. They call it kind of the fog of war. Things are happening, explosions, gunfire, and, you know, I've been on patrols and on missions where people from other units who, you know, didn't wait to identify us just simply opened fire. And that seems to be a problem that is not isolated, and fratricide happens, and I believe probably has always happened. But I think it's egregious that that the family was told, you know, all of these things, and now it's coming to light. It's really a black eye to the United States military. I think that's just a travesty.
Mm-hmm. As Mike says, Steve Cole, fratricide is as old, regrettably, as war. Are there procedures in place that would identify this and handle it? And one of the things you bring out in your story is that an incident of fratricide, it's down to the unit commander to decide what charges come up.
Right, exactly. I appreciate the call. You know, I think we could all agree that fratricide is an inevitable part of confused battlefields. It's certainly been around ever since human beings started drawing sticks against each other, and that is an inevitable feature of the confusion of conflict. On the other hand, I think we'd all agree that there has to be a line in a society ruled by law between accident and crime. And the question is, how do you create a system that describes and polices that line in as fair and transparent a way as possible? I think what military law experts would tell you is that the system we have now isn't anywhere near able to do that, because it allows each unit's commander to be both judge and prosecutor and to establish their own interpretations of where that line lies. And as a result, it's administered quite inconsistently from incident to incident and then across the years.
Steve Call is the managing editor of the Washington Post. His book, mentioned earlier, is Ghost Wars, The Secret History of the CIA, Afghanistan, and Bin Laden from the Soviet Union to September 10th, 2001. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Dave. Dave's calling from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a comment on Pat's death. Although, you know, it was was originally stated as being heroic. It ended up being very tragic, but I still think that Pat should be recognized as a hero due to the fact that he gave up a multi-million-dollar career in the NFL and willingly went to Afghanistan to serve his country, and unfortunately he died there. And that's just my comment. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
You know, the record shows, Neil, that on the battlefield in his last battle, Pat Tillman did exactly what he was trained to do, and then some. He fought bravely. He followed orders. He even tried to take initiative here and there. And I think some people close to him, as they arrive at their anger about the way this was managed by the Army, one of the things I've heard them say is, you know, it wasn't necessary to exaggerate or distort his actions. What he did was honorable enough. Why try to invent it into some public drama to serve some other purpose? He would have hated that because he was so free-spirited and independent-minded.
And though he was, perhaps the most prominent volunteer to sign up after 9/11, he didn't much like to talk about it.
No, he was quite reticent. In fact, he and his brother refused to speak to the media at any point about their decision to enlist or their experiences in the Army. And, you know, he really, the more I looked at his life and his character, the more I was struck by what an American original he really was. Only this country would have produced someone with this fierce, independent spirit and determination to do the exact opposite of what everyone around him expects, and yet to do so with a real sense of exuberance and verve about the way he lived in the world. He was, in many ways, quite an admirable character, I think.
Joining us now is Torrance. He's on the line from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Yes, sir. I, as a U.S. Marine, I found that a lot of times enlisted people are held accountable for their actions, while the officers kind of have this, I don't know, facade of justice. I want to know if these people are going to be held accountable for covering up and just a lack of integrity.
Great question. And I think that if you talk to enlisted men and people who follow these kinds of cases from the point of view of lawyers, some people argue that the weight of justice always falls on the lower ranks in these kinds of cases. It's hard to sort out responsibility for a chain of errors that begins with an officer's mistake and ends with a mistake on the ground. But is justice administered equally in both spheres? And then also, what about the aftermath, how this information was handled, how it was withheld from the family, how it was withheld from Senator McCain? Is anybody going to be held accountable for that? I think those are some of the questions that are alive as this investigation is reopened.
Well, even in your report, Steve, the name of the sergeant who was manning the truck with the machine gun, that's public. The name of the second lieutenant, the recent West Point graduate, that's public. The name of the higher officers, they weren't made public.
Well, I mean, in fairness, that's a bit of an accident of my effectiveness as a reporter under time pressure. I mean, I put in everything I learned, and to some extent what was in the paper was distorted by the uneven accomplishments of my investigation. But I did ask the Army for the names of the responsible officers, arguing that this was a public matter and it was beyond the normal reasons and policies that they used to justify keeping them off the public record, and they declined to provide those names.
Mm-hmm. So would they ever be made public, or are these issues of privacy?
Well, I suspect we will eventually get to the bottom of this, but it probably won't be because the Army makes an official decision to describe who these officers were or even necessarily what punishment, if any, they received.
Steve Call, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Neil. Thanks to be with you.
Steve Call, managing editor of the Washington Post, wrote a two-part series investigating the death of Army Ranger Pat Tillman. It appeared in the newspaper this past Sunday and Monday, and he joined us from the Washington Post studios here in Washington, D.C. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.